The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can. Well, to do it then. Country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So come here. This book of yours, I only saw this pop up on my Twitter feed last week.
Uh-huh. I've sent you your pre-copy this morning.
Signed.
You'll get it, I promise.
Signed. I want a special note.
Thing, by the way, there you go. Oh, it does lovely. Exist.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful cover, by the way. I noticed that on Twitter last week. It is a beautiful cover. Is my copy signed? Or have you just pawned it off to me? Send Malloy any one of the ones down the back of the truck there. No bother.
Right, we'll go and listen. We'll let the listeners into the secret, right? It's a pre-copy, right? It's not real hardback copy.
Okay.
Doesn't come out for a while yet, but you send it to people who you know who might kind of like it, right? So I pick a number of people, and of course I have to send one to Off the Ball. And there's probably still the odd typo in this one.
Typical.
But that's the whole idea. You send it to a few people. It's not. You can buy it. You can order it just now. But you can't get it until after Christmas. So,
after Christmas,
it does exist.
Oh, well, I'll be digging into that for sure. We should do some kind of a, we'll give over a football show and do a full hour on it and maybe drop in one or two characters.
You've not read it yet, you might hate it.
I suspect I won't. So what is it, just, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but is it just like a standard autobiography by Pat Nevin, or is it something, a bit more of a concept to it?
Basically, I think they would like you to think it was a memoir. But it's not really. It's I deal with a lot of other subjects that you wouldn't actually normally get in a memoir. So, not surprisingly, there's lots of music in it, and there's lots of stuff that I did when I was in London and even before that, etc. But there's a lot of things that I had to that you go through that you know I've seen it in a very different light from the players that. That I was around me, and I came in from a very different angle from it. So I just give it a wee bit of thought as to, you know, what I really felt about and what I think. Well, thought about it when I started playing, and even before that as well. So, you know, I know there's a chapter about homophobia, and there's a chapter about various things that you wouldn't get in a normal memoir about a footballer. So. It should be fairly different, I would suggest.
I would expect no less. Great. Well, listen, best of luck with it. We'll definitely do a big. Show on it some evening here when we get a chance to look through it. So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is having a tough weekend. He gets home, he puts his head in the pillow for a while, he goes about his business today, gets home. Who's there on Monday Night Football with flowing hair, looking well rested, eager to get back into the game, he said, Maurizio Pochettino. Perfect timing, says Ole.
Yeah, well rested but and well fed, I think we can say that.
Yeah.
I like to say that, is that polite?
He crossed everyone's mind a little bit, yeah.
he's enjoyed himself, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a few people during breaks and a variety of lockdowns that have done that. But yeah, of course, it's that happens, and Ole will know that that's going to happen. But right at this point in time, and to think how close it was. Now, they've not been great. They've been great in some moments, Manchester United, but there's been a few, you know, they've got a game in hand with everyone else. So they win that, they're up to 10 points. Had they won 1-0 instead of lost 1-0 the weekend, I think they'd been joint second. that's how tight it is. That's how mad it is. Now, that's not to say they're playing great. They ain't. But the differences between it are, you know, being good. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed that Leeds have scored. Got a goal back there, which is good news for them because they'd get hammered for about 30 minutes there. We'll get onto that in a minute. But anyway, Ole, he knows that's going to be there. The pressures are going to be there. He's Manchester United manager. You know, that's not the only guy. Poch is not going to be the only guy that's going to be there sniffing about looking for it. But of course, it's the most obvious ones. And you know Sky are going to break the bank to make sure he's on for that game right now. But he must be able to cope with that. He must be able to deal with that. What's harder to deal with is he's just not getting the best out of so many of his players. And that's the thing that he has to deal with day to day. And then they go through one moment you think, oh, against PSG, it's looking really good. And then suddenly it seems devoid of a huge amount of ideas when they're playing against Arsenal. And apart from the front two who looked lively and sharp, it just seemed lacking in, you know, creativity and ideas. And they were really, I don't know, most Man United fans saw, but I thought they were really disappointing. And even the changes he made were a bit, you know, they're a bit limited. You know, you expected a wee bit more excitement. And the fact that, you know, that's Manchester United, it's Old Trafford, you go for it. It doesn't matter if it's fans or not there. You kind of go for it. And that's sometimes the most disappointing thing with some of the managers. You think, well, come on, get on with it. I mean, Bielsa would, others would. And that was the most disappointing thing. I promised myself not to do this, but I've fallen into the trap again. So Pogba gives away the penalty, right?
Yeah.
I've never known a guy who gets so many people making so many excuses for him in my life. So I had a wee look at his stats today, right? He had a great start up to, you know, the first season, 18-19. And a really good start to the season, scored a whole bunch of goals, right? Since then, he's played 54 games and scored 4 goals, right? So this is a player who's world renowned. 54 games, 4 goals. 2 of them goals were the third goal in 3-0 wins, one of them being the EFL Cup against basically Brighton's reserve. So, you know, not important goals. But he did score 2 important goals in that huge long period. And there were 2 goals against West Ham United, both penalty kicks. And you're thinking, you've got to just call it out eventually. Look, you're not doing enough. You're not doing anywhere near enough for a guy that's been that cost, that expectation, that history, that ability, you know, and it must, if you had him in the team playing at his best, I don't think there would be a problem just now, but he's just not doing it. And I honestly, if he was anyone else, he wouldn't get a sniff of a game in Manchester United just now. His name a lot of times getting, and his history is getting in my game, and it's very, very, it must be upsetting if you're another player thinking, how am I not going to go at this? I'll put more effort in, I'll have more final product. It would drive anyone mad, but I'm sure it's driving Ollie mad, because it's almost as if he's dependent. If he doesn't do it, I'm kind of stuffed, and he's just not doing it.
Gary Neville post-match on Sky said with real emphasis, I thought, and with Pogba in mind, that Solskjaer now needs to make some really tough decisions. Now, when you're saying really tough decisions, you're not talking about Danny van de Beek. You're talking about Pogba. He didn't name Pogba, and the presenter didn't ask him to name names. But he said at the moment, Solskjaer is trying to keep everybody happy and he's finding himself in no man's land. He has to make really tough decisions now. Pogba on the bench is a tricky one, though. I mean, it will be pointed to if things aren't going well. But it has come to that, in your opinion.
But do this. I mean, I'm not one who just lives and dies by stats all the time. But what I've just told you about his 54 games, since he had a brilliant run, 54 games, that's internationals as well, to score 4 goals, and 2 of them penalties. And one of the other ones, both the other ones were unimportant goals. That's not somebody who you're going to, your go-to player, is going to get you a hole. When the times are tough, he's going to rally everyone around. So, you know, I don't think it's that tough a decision anymore. I really don't think it is. Yeah. So, you know, all he's got to look at it and think, right, someone's going to go and put a shift in there for me. You know, and they've got to always go in before. Now, whether it's for a debate or whoever, you've got to get people that are going to live and die for you. And it's just not happening. And I look at around the rest of the team, I don't see a lack of effort for most of the rest of the team. I don't really generally see that.
Roy Keane does. And no leaders, no effort. A lengthy discourse on manhood, I think, generally, just at the end of the game on Sky Sports.
Lack of leadership, yeah. 100% got along with that.
They said effort as well. Jamie Redknapp, for instance, said in the build-up to the penalty, 1 minute and 57 seconds of Arsenal possession and not a finger laid on any Arsenal player. Unacceptable. No intensity. No effort.
I'll take that. I'll accept that's a part of that. But I've been watching the games that they've played, and there have been a number of games where the effort has been absolutely fine. The other thing I have to take slightly on board, and I always do this because it's easy to go and hammer into people, and it makes you sound a bit clever sometimes. But in actual fact, a lot of the players will be quite tired just now. So some of the players go through tiredness at different times. And I'll get that. The odd game here and there, you're not getting to it. You're not at it to the same level. But with a lot of the players, or a number of players, it's maybe a bit up and down with that. And I think you look through the league, you're getting injuries and you're getting that with some of them. I didn't see a lack of that from, you know, obviously Rashford generally puts it about, you know, and certainly Greenwood as well. You know, he's learning a lot, but you give him opportunities to score. Don't think McTominay will stop working for you. Fred's generally working hard. I mean, there's a lot of people putting an effort in there, but they need more than that. They need, you know, real quality in there, and that's just what's been disappointing and lacking, and particularly in that final third and, you know, those big important moments. And what was disappointing is, you know, I don't think Arsenal were brilliant. they didn't have to be absolutely brilliant. And then I think the next question comes in, you know, has Ole been clever enough? Two things. One thing, making the big strong decisions. I think he's dropped Pogba a few times anyway, but maybe every time he brings him in, he's expecting a reaction, and it's got very, very limited reaction to it. And the other thing is maybe the question mark about the tactics. And I thought it took him a long time to really... And he chopped and changed the tactics a few times. Watched them in the game the week before against Chelsea, where they dominated Chelsea for large periods of that game. And they only got a point out of it. And his tactics were really good that day. I don't think he got his tactics right in that one. And, you know, you just can't do it too often. But I think it's probably early. And Pochettino is making himself available, but I don't think he's going to get the call in the next week or two.
On the tactical situation and on him finding the right pieces of the jigsaw, when he first took over, there were the split strikers on quite a few big occasions, and essentially Manchester United just as a counter-attacking team. And then there was a period of downturn, and then Bruno Fernandes arrived in January, and this 4-3-3 thing would have given a lot of Manchester United fans a sense of confidence that he's cracked the code. Finally, we have a vehicle here which will work for Pogba and he'll spark off Bruno. And that was how they finished last season, Pat, you know. So that, I think a lot of United fans are looking at these seven games in the Premier League going, this kind of 4-3-3 thing with Pogba and Bruno and, say, a Matic or a McTominay, whoever, interchangeable there, and the three lads ahead of them, like, that seemed to be working pretty well. Why are we back to the chopping and changing and jumping around and searching for a formula again?
I just wonder if he's overthinking it as well. I mean, if you get a couple of results that don't go for you, there may well be a little bit of panic about it and think, oh, I better go and do something. And there is also the charge where you start trying to fit everybody in, you know. And to be fair, there's some players that are, I mean, Bruno Fernandes, is, we know the quality he's got, but he's not been maybe as effective as he's been in previous games. So that makes a big, big difference as well. And you kind of give him a little bit of leeway because, you know, he had such a big effect when he came in, but he's not having as big an effect now. And again, that might be he's not playing within a system, you know, that absolutely suits him, or a position that absolutely suits him. But you're right, there was a period where it was going well, but he's changed it quite a few times. We always remember, we forget the times where he changed it and it went quite well, because he did. Tactics weren't bad against PSG, they were good against Chelsea, but that's not actually good enough for a Man United manager, is it really? You know, it needs to be much more regular. And I think everyone just looks at a league table and thinks, you better get out of it. But you know how quickly it can change. I'm honestly really trying hard not to go down hard on him now. Cavani's hardly in any games. I'm not convinced that Cavani's going to be the answer, or one of the answers, really. I'm not convinced about that. He's not played enough football for a long period of time, but you never know. He might help a little bit. But I look at it and think, well, I watched, Chelsea, a few weeks ago. Absolutely losing goals for fun. Hilarious. A joke. You know, and you just think, that's a mess. You can't figure that out. Hearing a number of people saying, you've got to get rid of Frank Lampard, that's naive. And in actual fact, once you get that first four or five games, which were stupid, mad, pre-season-ish type of games, out of the way, and then it settled into it, you see what people are trying to do. And I suppose my United fans will hope that's what's going to happen with Ollie. I'd say he's probably got about three or four before the more games before, you know, the upper management start getting a bit jittery. I think they'll get jittery after that. If they're still in the bottom half after that, I think they'll start getting, because they'll start believing that the possibility of top four at the end of the season is already beginning to slip.
Yeah.
And that's just all. It's about nothing else. It's just about that.
Weirdly, that Champions League table makes for very good reading against the Champions League semi-finalists and finalists of last season.
Exactly. That's why there's always a slight holding off of it, because you know there is something there. You know that, you know, there's a capability there, that they've done it in a number of games this season. And it's, again, we do get carried away. They've played six Premier League games this season. You know, they played against Chelsea there, they played against Arsenal. They're not kind of the easiest games, and they didn't get the results they wanted out of them, and they haven't played absolutely brilliant with them, but I still think it's a bit early to sort of jump into a footer down Ollie just now.
Yeah. So Matic, Fred, McTominay, Van de Beek, Pogba, Bruno Fernandes. What is the high profile occasion or match? I mean, Sevilla, he put it down to tiredness. When was the moment? Because I don't remember it when he lost faith in the 4-3-3 that powered them through to the Champions League right through the end of last season. Like, is that gone now?
Again, sometimes it's if you do a 4-3-3 and you think, well, if I've got a fully fit Martial and available Martial, and you can have Rashford one side of him, and you've got that sort of pace, and those players are all in good fit form.
Yeah.
But if you sometimes find yourself with certain players, like if Fernandes can hold a whole area, you think, yeah, that works. But one of the players in that sort of system falls off. It's kind of a wide system to play. You know, it's kind of 4-3-3. If the three in the midfield are a little bit too tight, or not tight enough, you'll get shredded with good teams. And so you need all three of them really working really hard, really tight, in good form together.
Okay.
Else that system's a kind of scary system to play. And it may well be that he's just not felt that they've been up to it. And oddly, watching McTominay, it must be difficult for him. He goes up and plays in Scotland, and we just put him at right centre-back. We never let him near them in midfield. It's the weirdest thing.
Right.
Whereas United, if he gets a good partnership with someone. But the other thing is, it's horses for courses. Some teams will sit in against you and play a different system. And the 4-3-3 won't necessarily suit that system, and they'll be aware of that. But you know what you always think? If you're Man United or Liverpool or Man City, you should be thinking, we'll make your change for us. But it doesn't always work that way.
Mm. You said Arsenal weren't that good. I think that you're not the only person that feels that they didn't have to be exceptional. Gabriel continues to catch the eye, and in particular then, Thomas Partey. He was alongside Elneny in midfield, but he looked really good. He's 27 years old. He has spent 5 years at Atletico. He won possession 11 times. That's no joke, to win possession 11 times in a game. Made a team-high 79 touches, completed a game-high 3 dribbles after attempting 4, and 93% pass completion of his 57 passes. Roy Keane said afterwards, I think he's got a chance of matching what Patrick Vieira used to do. He's big, he's strong, aggressive, and he likes to pass it forward. Were you as impressed?
Yeah, funnily enough, I just kept on comparing to Pogba and think, well, I know who I want in my midfield.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I know who I want. You want the guy that's, you know, putting it about, the guy who's hungry. And it's so all those things that everyone could see there, you know he makes tackles. You know, he's very, very powerful. He's very strong. He's got decent vision as well. He wants to look forward. He wants to run forward. He wants to be positive. And then you look at others and you think, actually, the thing is hunger. Mm. You actually look as if you are seriously hungry. You want to win this game. You want to win that ball. You want to win that midfield. And he did. He won the midfield. And you know, it may well be that, you know, some people just come into a new team and they have this lift because they're that hungry and that desperate. Kind of doesn't look like that with him. He just looks like he's made for the Premier League. He's absolutely made for the Premier League. And he just doesn't look like an Arsenal player. I haven't said that just before Arsenal, you know, Arsenal have been playing this 3-4-3. And lots of people were saying, well, what about the creativity in midfield, you know? Well, he's not a classic, like, number 10 type player, but he will make, if he keeps on making those getting those turnovers and those tackles, he will get those balls out to the wide areas, you know, and out to the strikers really quickly. And it won't be the kind of a number 10 or an Ozil kind of style that will be getting them. It'll be the pure pace that will get them into those areas. And they're just using what they're good at. I mean, that's what I suppose he's all about. You know, a manager who comes in and thinks, right, okay, I've been under Man City, but I'm not going to play in Man City because I've not got Man City type players. I'm going to play with what I've got here, which suits well. And the right system for that, absolutely, definitely, it looks like 3-4-3. I have to say, I'm really impressed with it. I'm kind of happier when he puts Kieran Tierney as a wee bit further forward, not the left centre-back, but left in the middle of a four, because obviously I know his capabilities, and he could be very special at the crosses that he'll put in. I mean, really, really, really special.
Yeah, he's looking like really good value, isn't he, increasingly? By the way, we've made this point a gazillion times as well, but just to finish off that game, seeing as you mentioned Tierney. I mean, the other point, I think Gary Neville for one made it, but you've got like the diamonds, so you're relying on Shaw and Wan-Bissaka for your width and for all the attacking potency down the wings. Like, if United are going to be brutal with themselves, of that back four, you'd keep Maguire, but you need pace alongside him. Realistically, Luke Shaw is okay. Wan-Bissaka has many attributes, but he's got deficiencies as well. You're kind of looking brutally at trying to bin three of them if you want to win a league over the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it's really harsh on Wan-Bissaka, but he's certainly in the top 10 right backs in England that are English, you know, yeah. Which is a bit harsh, but possibly true, because he's nowhere near the top five, I don't think.
No.
I mean, and that's a guy who's spent a lot of money. Now, as you say, tackling's brilliant. He actually is really nice on the ball. His delivery's really, really, really average for that position. For that position, for what you're used to, for right wing-backs, right full-backs, it's just accepted now. You've got to be a lot better than that. You've got to be much, much better than that. And the amount of chances he's created and good crosses he's put in has been so, so limited. And, you know, I kind of love him as a player, oddly enough. I really like him. But see, if you don't add that bit to it, you know, you're going to be so far behind in the queue getting international games. But you've got to add that to Manchester United. They need something coming from those two areas. Shaw, he's a funny one because I think sometimes the way he looks kind of puts you off slightly because he looks a little bit sluggish. He's actually really quick. Somebody said that to me recently. Well, I've got Luke Shaw and he's quite slow. No, he's not. He's lightning. He just, because he's got that body shape, he looks slow. But he's actually a very quick player. But, you know, his delivery has I think that's dropped off from what it was in the past as well. So you're absolutely right. There's not that many in the top six, you know, the big six, as it were, that would steal many of their players off them, certainly in that back line.
Liverpool beat West Ham 2-1. Joe Gomez header, all those moments are just mini reminders of the vulnerability that is there in Van Dijk's absence. But on the other side of the coin, Diego Jota is looking increasingly like a good signing. And if we look at the table, I mean, we're kind of wondering about this strange season for the opening couple of games, Pat, and there was the Aston Villa performance. But as it's starting to come out in the wash now, Liverpool on 16 points. Leicester go to winning a point of them, I should say, this evening with the same number of games played. But Liverpool are starting to just get into a habit again of winning, and it's looking ominous. They play Man City this Sunday. We're not going to talk to you till that game. So suddenly that is really, really interesting. City are in 10th. They have a game in hand in Liverpool. If they win that, they go to 14. So one City play their game in hand and win it, presumably, in so much as you can presume anything. They are within a point of Liverpool. Sorry, 2 points of Liverpool. So this Sunday in Manchester, that already is really, really mouthwatering.
Nah, it should be. I'm not going to say it's going to be a great game. I'm not sure it will be a great game. The recent games we've watched Man City, I mean, the game of the weekend wasn't brilliant. I mean, they won and they never looked as if they were going to lose, but they weren't brilliant. They were a long, long way away from being as good as they've been in the past. But remember, I suppose we tend to keep on forgetting, they're getting a game every 3 days, and it's Champions League games, and it's bang, 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 bang. And they do look a bit dull, some of the teams at the moment, and certainly Man City have, in comparison to the past, they do look really quite dull. And I mean, even to the point where Kevin De Bruyne is only getting an 8.5 out of 10 some of these games. And it is a wee bit like that, but they're quite capable of lifting it. And I hope that they do, and I hope that Liverpool do. Because again, Liverpool, you're right, they are getting the wins and they're getting there, and they're depending on the bits of brilliance again from likes of Salah, and they have done for quite some time. But have they been as great as they've been in the past? No, absolutely not. A distance away for that. And it's not just, I don't think, because of Van Dijk. So we shall see if this weekend is the one where those two teams come back to what they're something close to their best. I'm not sure that either of them are quite ready for that yet, but it will be a massively important game. It's one of those ones that I half think Liverpool would be delighted with a draw, but I don't think Man City will be. I think Man City have to make sure they don't let Liverpool get away again. And there's every chance that could happen if they really don't push it. The one good thing that they've got, and all the English teams have got, well, not all, Chelsea haven't, but those three, you know, have actually won all games in Champions League. So you've got three teams at the top of the Champions League, and then you've got Chelsea, who are joint top, you know, with Atletico Madrid. So what they're going to get quite soon is a little bit of a break, because if they get through their group early, they can take a little bit of rest and rest a few players.
Yeah.
And that might make a difference to the standard of football being played by these two teams improving. But you're right, you know, Jota was certainly looks as if he's come in and he's obviously scoring, but he's looking really good, really sharp. And it's all about, can you fit in with that style? And it looks like he fits in perfectly well with that style. And Shaqiri looked really nice. That through ball of his was different class.
Pat, you touched on the schedule there. I think soft tissue muscle injuries are up 45% or so on last season. Glancing at the schedule for the Champions League clubs at the moment, it is just almost prohibitive to playing your best on a semi-regular basis. It looks, I don't want to say miserable, because they're doing something they love, they're paid lots of money. But, you know, when you're on this treadmill and there's no fans, yeah, I've had a weird pre-season and you've probably got a few other concerns with COVID and everything else. I don't know, it just seems like we're heading towards a pinch point this side of Christmas where, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, be it performances will just go off a cliff or just the number of injuries will almost bring the thing into disrepute because there's that many. But this is unsustainable. This looks miserable.
I don't know, miserable. It's probably, I think it's interesting because you just have.
if you were a player though, I'm almost having you to pitch yourself back into existence of a player.
Yeah, I've been through periods. I remember there was one period that was after was a massive shutdown for snow for two months or so, and we were getting a game every two or three days. In fact, we played one Saturday and then the Sunday as well,
right.
And it was horrendous. Yeah. And you know, we fell off a cliff because we had the injuries. But some of the other ones managed a little bit better. And it's, you know, when you're coming into seasons, you have to say, right, okay, am I going to depend on these 12, 13, 14 players? Or with all these hundreds of millions of pounds that we've spent, should we actually have a better balanced squad? So if this is the season the better balanced squad wins, the people have not spent every single penny on the 11 superstars and then four of them get injured and then they look really average, then so what? Mm. That's another way of winning things.
Yeah,
that's,
okay.
It's another deal of winning. It's why I kind of have even though I do love watching Manchester City play, I don't listen to excuses. You don't get them that often from Pep, but you think of, no, well, wait a minute, you've got four wingers, they all cost about 70 million quid.
Yeah.
So you're about a centre back, mate. You're not going to get any sympathy from, you know, and everybody else is saying, they're not necessarily saying it, but they're all thinking it in the league. So, no, if it kind of equalises it a little bit there, that's just the deal, that's just the game, and you have to manage it. Again, and some of the teams are already considering it. You watched Chelsea at the weekend there, they had three games away from home in a row. So Man United away from home, tough game, hard work. And then you had, after that, you had the Krasnodar. The Krasnodar, it's a 4,200-mile round trip.
Yeah.
And then up to Burnley. Now, that's actually a tough gig, that. It's a very tough gig, that. So what did they do? They rested Thiago Silva and thought, right, don't go all the way over there, mate. And by the way, you've just been back to Brazil and back as well on top of it. Because so, you're adding these international things. So it's all the things the fans get a bit fed up, because we do go on about it a bit and say, oh, they're tired, and they are tired. Yes, they are. They're exhausted, and that's why you get some really dull performances sometimes. It's not an excuse, it's a reason.
Yes.
But you have to find a way around that reason if you're the coach and you're the manager.
Okay. Anything else from the weekend you want to mention or that caught your eye?
You know, were you watching? I was watching matches, and there was a bit of me that started getting a bit miffed, because I'm thinking, is every match going to get decided in penalty kicks here? And it began to feel like, you know, like Spurs get their penalty kick and big question marks over that. You know, it was an interesting one, because I have to say, if you can look at it either way, absolutely either way. I mean, if you say to me, it's one of those ones where this is the biggest set in the fence I'll ever have. If you say to me it's a penalty and I look at it from one angle and from one position, I'll say, yes, it's a penalty, clear, because he takes out Harry Kane. And if you say to me, Harry Kane has been clever in putting himself there to take the hat, I'll say, yeah, that's true as well.
Mm.
So that's a tough one. But there was loads. There was the one with, obviously, Liverpool with Salah's one. You know, and you're thinking, what are you doing throwing yourself? And then you look at it closely. Yeah, he was kicked.
Mm.
That was a penalty kick. You know, and I'm thinking, can I just see a game at some point? There's Manchester United one. I want to see a game that's not decided by a penalty. So that's why the Villa game against Southampton was brilliant, and watching Ward-Prowse, I don't know if you watch them closely.
No.
I do this strange thing. We watch biomechanics with players sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a chance, if you've still got on tape anywhere, if you've recorded it, now, try and look at some of the positions that Ward-Prowse gets his body into as the ball has just left his foot. Just look at his body position. It looks as if he's having a fit. He's crunched over in this weird, unnatural, strange position. And people talk about Beckham used to do that, which he did to some degree.
Yeah.
But I watch him do it, and it is absolutely extraordinary. One of the most extreme I've seen. There was, help me out with the name, Snodgrass. Snodgrass actually does exactly the same thing. But when you freeze it and look at it, and to get the ball to do what they get them to do, with that sort of whip and that sort of curl, it's genius. But the contortions you have to put your body into, people hardly talk about it. But if you get a chance, just for a minute, just pause it and watch the angle where his body is. Look where his head's over there, looking over there, and the ball's going there. It's extraordinary things that done. And you just say, oh, that's a nice free kick. It's much more than that. It's extraordinary.
Okay, I will look out for that. Lar in Kilkenny, then, to finish up, does make a very fair point. Arteta did make those hard decisions. Look at Ozil. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer doesn't have it in him. And then Colin Kavanagh in Arklow says, you can reassure Pat, there is a market for his book amongst Evertonian Cocktail Twins fans.
Both of them?
Yeah. He says, one of my favourite players at Goodison during his time with the club. If he has an extra signed pre-copy in need of proofing, I'm your man. Good man, Colin. Pat, thanks a mil. We'll talk next week. We've got Liverpool City next week to talk about. See you then.
Pleasure. See ya.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
Welcome back. So Pat Nevin mentioned that Leeds had pulled a goal back against Leicester. They were 2-0 down at half-time, went to 2-1. Leicester have since scored a third, Jamie Vardy doing his thing. So as things stand, Liverpool top of the table on 16 points. Leicester, if they see this one out, 10 minutes to go, 3-1 up, will be just a single point back in second, with Spurs 2 points off Liverpool, and then Everton in fourth alongside Southampton, 3 points beyond Liverpool. So that's how we are at the end of the Premier League weekend. We did have Manchester United against Arsenal live on the show yesterday. Brian Kerr, Stephen Doyle on commentary.
But it finished Manchester United 0, Arsenal 1. Famous victory for the Gunners, Brian Kerr. First time since 2006 they'd won at Old Trafford in the Premier League. What do you think a result like that will do for the Gunners?
Well, I think it was a very important result for Arsenal because they've had defeats, 3 wins and 3 defeats so far, with defeats to Leicester and Manchester City and Liverpool indicate a weakness, and the fact that they have been able to be what would be considered the better teams in the league so far. So it's an important one morale-wise. Arteta's not too long in the job. It's obvious that he's making an impression. They won the Cup last year, won the Community Shield. But you know, the league form, they've got to improve and produce and finish higher than they did last year, finish 8th last season. So it was a very important result from that point of view. And they played well today, I thought, without creating numerous chances. They dominated possession in the first half particularly. The second half was much more even. They had to wait on a mistake for Manchester United to get a goal, get a penalty. There's much more penalties now, I think, against Manchester United at Old Trafford than there used to be when there was crowds there, which is an interesting one. But I think overall they just about deserved it. They made the clear opportunities in the match, and they were the team that had the better, I'd say, combination play and fluency and clarity about what they were trying to achieve.
They went with a back three, which we've seen them doing before, Mikel Arteta, the Arsenal manager. But just thinking back to the game now, when you think of the back three, there was Gabriel as the anchor, you had Rob Holding and Kieran Tierney on each side, and then out in the wings you had Hector Bellerin and Saka. And you would have to say all five of those players had really good games today from a defensive perspective. And then maybe if you could also talk to us a bit about Thomas Partey, who really was the best midfielder on show for both sides today.
Yeah, I think the system worked well. I think of the back three, I thought all three of them played well, but I think Tierney needs a mention because he was at times their best attacker. I thought he was playing left side centre back, something we saw you know, Sheffield United introduced their play in the last couple of seasons. But Tierney, he was a full-back at Celtic. Arteta's been using him as a centre-half, but he's an attacking centre-half. Saka was playing as the wing-back. He was drifting on the inside, sometimes staying wide, getting involved in combinations with Aubameyang. But Tierney was often the one getting up there and whipping crosses in. But then when it came to it late on in the match, he was part of the dig in and let's hold on to this lead we have. And they did that very well and very efficiently. Partey was the dominant player in the first half in the middle of the field, spraying, winning the ball back, spraying passes. The combination, I liked the balance with himself and Elneny. They had a good understanding of one holding and one advancing forward to join up to the front man. But there was always somebody there out of the pair. There was never times when they vacated the midfield and left it open. But Partey showed his all-round game was good. He surged forward from the midfield time, spread some passes around and won the ball back, which was very important too. So impressive, given that it's only his second start in the Premier League, and he's come on and sub as one. So he looks like a very good signing for Arsenal.
So just to say about Arsenal then, because as I said, it's a massive win for them, and they haven't done well against the top six teams over the last number of years. They seem to have a hard centre now, which is something maybe Arsenal didn't have in the past. They were a bit of a soft-centred side. But a result like this, because they had lost the last two against Leicester City and Manchester City, but they were only by a goal to nil. They weren't bad defeats. So what's your kind of feeling for Arsenal now, kind of seven games into the season?
Well, I think they look better. I mean, look, Arteta's a young manager. I'm sure he's a lot to learn. We all still have a lot to learn. But he's come from being the assistant manager. You come to be the main man. He's played the media quite well. He's been very strong in how he's dealt with the Guendouzi situation and the Ozil situation. Now, you know, it might not be miles away from that not looking very well if they stop making chances, and they haven't been making an awful lot of chances. They got the win today, which is the most important thing. Didn't create loads of chances, but it was against the fairly organised Manchester United defence. But say it hadn't gone so well, then people might be saying, but your most creative player, you're paying him over 300 grand a week and not using him. Guendouzi, promising young player, gets around midfield very well, lots of energy, always wanted to get on the ball. And but you let him off, you let him out, you know, on a disciplinary issue. So, you know, I think he's handled some things very well. But I'd say there's a lot going on at Arsenal. I'd say that he is now the out front man. It's a big difference between the coach and being the assistant manager to being having to make all the big decisions around the team, handling the media, handling the agents in your ear, and all the stuff that goes with it. So if it doesn't go completely smoothly, I wouldn't be totally surprised. I don't think it's gone completely smoothly, because they've lost three games in the league already this season against the teams you mentioned and I've mentioned. But there's definite signs of improvement. They are stronger looking. They are prepared to change tactically as the game has been played and in what's needed. You look at the change he made late on when United are throwing the kitchen sinker. He brings on Mustafi, moves Saka up a little bit, and moves Tierney out to the left wing. So they got more height in the box, because they know United will be forcing to bang her into the box. And trying to get something out Maguire when he gets in there, maybe Lindelof, whatever. So there's a flexibility about his tactics that's required, and not as, you know, maybe it was something that wasn't there before. Partey will give them a bit more around the middle of the field. Certainly another option. Interesting that Ceballos doesn't get to play. He didn't get a start today. Saka didn't get a start. Gets brought on, I think, late in the game. But that's all. I think it's all very promising, I think, for Arsenal, but they've still a bit to do to catch up on Manchester City and Liverpool, I'd say, in particular. But they show today they're a match of Manchester United.
Every time Manchester United do badly and we criticise them, then Ole Gunnar Solskjaer seems to bounce back and, you know, reply with a couple of important wins. And then when they get a couple of important wins, they seem to follow that up with a really disappointing defeat. Like, it's just, there's, I suppose, they are consistently inconsistent.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, it was a superb performance during the week. I did commentary on the match during the week. They won 5-0 against a team that got to semi-final of the Champions League last year and were top of the Bundesliga going into the weekend. And they were really, really good. Went to PSG and won that match last week. So it's a problem that all the clubs have at the moment. It's balancing out the frequency of games. The two matches a week, games, Premier League, Champions League, every week. It's Tuesday or Wednesday, Saturday or Sunday. Short pre-season, dealing with recovery of players, information, I'd say information overload from the sports science people at the back, in the background of the club, and they're trying to handle that. And he, you know, Solskjaer and Arteta and Klopp and everybody else, all the other managers, you know, Frank Lampard, are all trying to handle that. So they are being inconsistent. And they played well the other night. The players that played well the other night didn't play well tonight. I mean, you know, just hang on, like, switch this off, Stephen. You know, like, Marcus Rashford, when he came on the other night, was brilliant. But Greenwood was smashing when he was on the pitch in the match. The beat didn't get a start tonight. It was on too late tonight to really influence it, although he did a couple of very good things. But Fred had I felt an outstanding game on Wednesday, and didn't do it tonight. You know, Pogba was in and out of it, didn't do enough, and then gave away the big moment, the penalty. So they are inconsistent, and it's a problem for them. But I think this season is going to be like that for most teams. I don't see anyone going on the type of run that Liverpool had last season, and Manchester City in the latter part when the league was done and dusted and Liverpool already won it. I don't see that happening. I think it's going to be everyone dropping points on a regular basis. And, you know, while Liverpool have stuck together a few results, but they're scratching out results, and they've dropped points, and they've dropped, like, compared to last year, I think it was 28 matches in, 27 wins and a draw. We're not going to see that this year. They're already down 5 points. Manchester City are down 7. Manchester United only have 7, I think, from 6 games. Yeah. But he does need to get a bit of consistency, and they need to win games, whether it's home or away. They've lost 3 home games, so the fear of going to Old Trafford and them overrunning you, that's gone. But we probably suspected that was the case anyway, with no crowds.
But because it is Manchester United, the biggest club in the UK, some would argue, but they are. They, you know, I know Liverpool fans might like to hear it, but they are the biggest club in the UK and one of the biggest clubs in the world up there, Real Madrid and Barcelona. And he's always going to get questioned, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, when they have bad results. And, you know, he's got that record today, I mentioned during the commentary, since 1972-73 season under Frank O'Farrell. They haven't gone four home games to open the season without a win before since back then. So that's not a good record to have against your name as a manager of Manchester United.
No, for sure. The only thing is, I think in any of the previous managers' era, they had the backing of the crowd at Old Trafford, and be it at times that the crowd can be, often I think a lot of them are day visitors. There's an awful lot of very passionate people to go week in, week out, and they do get behind the team. And even in the bad days of recent seasons, when David Moyes was under pressure, when Mourinho was under pressure, I felt the crowd always got behind the manager and the team. And, you know, he doesn't have the benefit of that now. It's like all the other grounds, it's fairly soulless, and there's no hostility towards the opposition, and there's no fear factor involved. So while you could say, yeah, they've lost 3 and drawn 1, it was a good draw last week with Chelsea. Two of the sides expected to finish in the top 4 this season are there and thereabouts. A good draw. Defeat to Crystal Palace was poor. Defeat to Spurs was poor, be it they were down to 10 men. But Spurs were already playing very well in the match before Martial was put off. The defeat at Brighton was poor. But again, you have to go back. It's most unusual circumstances. Finishing one season so late, players going away in the build-up to the pre-season, going away and playing 3 international matches each, and then coming back in, and they're in for a couple of weeks, and they're gone again for another 3 weeks. So the managers are having very little time to work on the fitness of the players. It's match recovery, training. I'd say it's maximum 1 day a week where you can actually work on physical fitness stuff or technical tactical stuff. I'd say the opportunities are very, very limited indeed. So it would give Solskjaer and all the other managers some leeway, but, you know, for Manchester United supporters, it's very frustrating and very disappointing, and I think more was expected.
And to be fair, they got off to a slow start last season, didn't have a great first half of the season, but then went on a brilliant run and eventually got into the top four, which is where they wanted to be. So still plenty of time for United to...
But you know, like, I think everyone accepted this year that they still weren't but going to be close to Liverpool and Manchester City, but I think there's an expectancy that they would be, that if the others are dropping points, that they're going to be closer. They've a bit to do at the moment from the situation they're in. They've got to start stringing a few consistent results together while they walk on in the Champions League. They've Istanbul, they've got to go to Istanbul next, but they've got to be able to combine both, and at the moment they don't seem to be able to do that.
They sure don't. Brian Kerr and Stephen Doyle there talking after commentary of United Arsenal yesterday. Next Sunday, this Sunday coming, I suppose, we'll have Manchester City against Liverpool. Commentary of that game for you if you can't make it to a TV here on Off the Ball.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.